I have with me this morning Dr. Howard Simon, the director of the Central New York Bariatric Surgery Center at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Simon. Thanks for coming in today.
Good morning.
Well, you have some news for us, I think. You're moving or you've moved?
We moved. We completed the move about 3 weeks ago. We moved the bariatric center, the place where we see patients, from the Institute of Human Performance downtown to the South Office Building at Community General Hospital.
So you're now at the Upstate University Hospital at the community campus.
That's correct.
Wow. So did you moved everything, the whole shebang?
What we did was the entire operation for bariatrics has moved the community. We doubled the size, or probably a little bit more than double the size of the office. We hired, you know, more people, more dietitians, more another nurse practitioner, a lot more office staff to accommodate the increasing volume. And it works very well because we do 85% of the bariatric cases at the community campus now. And it makes it very easy to have our office right next to the hospital and the place where we see patients.
That's wonderful. So it's kind of one-stop shopping in a way for
it's
you
good.
And for the patients.
It's very, very convenient. The other portion of that is several of us who do general surgery, minimally invasive and general surgery, also moved our practice there. So I see both my general surgery patients and all the bariatric surgery patients are there.
So your ORs and everything are all there.
Everything is there. We still operate at upstate, sometimes the downtown campus, but most of the operations have moved to the community campus.
Well, you know, for those of our listeners who may not be familiar with bariatric surgery, I mean, it seems to me you have a very extensive program. Why don't we just start talking a little bit about who are, you know, the people that are eligible for this type of surgery to deal with obesity? I mean, obviously, obesity is rampant in this country, and people are trying every which way, I think, to get control of it, but some can't do it by the standard diet route. So tell us, you know, who would be eligible for bariatric surgery?
Well, bariatric surgery is specifically people who are morbidly obese, which is both a medical description and a description of a disease. Morbid obesity is a disease. When people gain the weight that would classify them as morbidly obese, the vast, vast majority cannot lose weight by any other means than an operation.
So let's just define, excuse me. So it's like 100 pounds over their standard weight?
The definition of morbid obesity by the National Institutes of Health is a patient has to have a body mass index over 40, which certainly, if you're 100 pounds overweight, you would have a body mass index of 40. You could actually be very short and have a body mass index of 40 without being 100 pounds overweight. And just as important, if not more important in some cases, are the diseases that are associated with being so large. People with type 2 diabetes, obstructive sleep apnea, hypertension. So the NIH also defines morbid obesity as someone who's got a body mass index of 35 with either diabetes, sleep apnea, or hypertension.
So all of those associated diseases really fit into that kind of criteria.
Those are the criteria for people that would qualify for an operation to help them with their disease.
As far as you're concerned, though, are there some other considerations that you put into the hopper, so to speak, before you consider taking a patient for this kind of surgery? I mean, do you evaluate their psychological status? I mean, those kinds of things.
We do that. The journey from seeing us to the operation really is a journey, and it's a process. And it usually takes about 3 or 4 months to go through the whole, not just the evaluation process, but the behavioral modification process as well. Because while the surgery is incredibly effective, if people cannot change their habits, then they're going to be one of the 20% that is not successful long term.
So in other words, even after the surgery, they may have an initial success, but if they haven't kind of dealt with some of these other issues, their lifestyle issues, they may actually gain the weight back.
That's true. I mean, the statistics are pretty clear. For patients who are morbidly obese, who try to lose weight by standard methods with diet, exercise, available legal medicine, only about 3% of them will keep the weight off long term.
Wow.
With bariatric surgery, about 80% will. So
wow.
It's successful. But there are 20% that long-term just are not able to change their habits enough to maintain the weight.
So, for example, they can't eat quite as much food, but they end up eating constantly little amounts of food.
We call that grazing, and that's a problem. And I think the behavioral modification period before the operation helps. I don't think it's ethical to take someone, they're morbidly obese, they meet the criteria, and just tee them up and do the operation within a few weeks. They're not ready. So we get them ready over a few months.
I want to talk more about kind of some of the services that you offer around that idea. But you have, I know that the program's been going on since the 70s here at Upstate. I mean, the idea of doing bariatric surgery. How many patients do you see on average a year, and is it changing?
Well, there's 20 million people in the country who are morbidly obese. And if you look at the numbers, only about 1% of them have been evaluated and seen and operated on. So it's really a fairly small percentage. This year, we'll probably see about 600 patients and operate on about 600 patients.
Wow.
That's going up. That's probably gone up for us about 50% in the last 2 or 3 years.
It has. So it's really, and what do you attribute that to? The fact that your program's getting more well-known, or the fact that there are more people out there?
I think it's both. I think that when you operate on people and they get good results, they have friends and family and people they know. And I think also that people are becoming more aware of what can be done to help them. They said only 1% of people who would be theoretic candidates for the operation have ever been referred to or sought care.
Wow. Well, part of it probably is also the cost involved, I would think.
Yeah, it's expensive. Almost all insurance companies cover that. So for the patient, I'm sure they have some copays, but the operation is covered.
Yeah.
It's a medical procedure that, actually in some cases, probably in many cases, saves the insurance company money over the time,
right,
over a long time.
So in the very little bit of time we have left before we take a quick break, because then we are coming back, what you have like three different procedures that you can do for this? Just give us a quick outline.
There are three operations. They're roughly divided into operations that restrict what you eat and then operations that have metabolic effects. The most commonly done operation is a gastric bypass, which is a restrictive operation but also a very strongly tinted metabolic operation.
That means it changes your metabolism.
It does. It changes your hormone levels. It allows people with diabetes to lose weight even before they've to lose their diabetes, even before they lost a lot of weight in many cases. We do sleeve resections, which is mostly a restrictive operation where you take out the outside of the stomach and leave a very narrow tube of stomach, which is very effective. And then there's the laparoscopic band, which frankly is not being done in most centers as much anymore because about 30% of them have to be removed for complications.
But there are three options. And then you can make that choice based on what the individual patient needs.
We talk about it and come to a mutual accommodation.
Well, we're going to just take a very short break. And when we come back, I want to talk more about your program, some of the stuff that you do before, some of the stuff that you do after, and obviously the overall success rate. We'll be right back, so please stay right there. Here along with my guest, bariatric surgeon, Dr. Howard Simon, and we're talking about bariatric or weight loss surgery. Well, right before the break, you were telling us about the three different procedures that can be done. In your experience, are any one of them more successful, you mentioned that the last one, the banding, has some complications. What are the types that you feel that you've seen most success with?
Well, First of all,
is it very individual?
I think that if you look at the overall statistics, and again, gastric bypass has been done the longest of all the operations by far.
Help us understand, though, when you say gastric bypass, what exactly is happening?
A gastric bypass is an operation where you partition the stomach so that the portion that receives food is very small.
But the stomach as such remains in place. It's just
that's correct.
You put some kind of a partition.
We divide it. We divide it. Not in half, but in a small part and a big part. The big part just remains there. So the small part is where the food goes, and it stretches with very little food and makes people feel full. The metabolic component of the operation, you bypass about 100 to 150 centimeters of bowel. And by doing that, first of all, you don't absorb all your calories for the first year or so, which adds to the weight loss. But more importantly, you change different hormone levels. For instance, people who have diabetes and are only on, say, metformin or one of the oral agents, many of those people go home off their medicine. Their diabetes is gone immediately.
Wow.
And the reason for that obviously isn't weight loss. The reason is that certain hormones, for instance, GLP-1, GIP, these are just gastrointestinal hormones, they make your insulin work better. So type 2 diabetes is a disease of insulin resistance. The insulin resistance gets better very quickly. So a significant number of people will go home off their diabetic medicines with a gastric bypass.
So in fact, it's really a cure, but I mean a real effective treatment for diabetes, even apart from the issue of more obesity.
Overall, 80% of people who have a gastric bypass will be off all their medicines within a year for diabetes.
Wow.
The other 20% are much better. Now, with the band, if you're just referring to diabetes, only about 50% of people with a band will resolve their diabetes within a year. Interestingly, with a gastric sleeve, it's closer to a gastric bypass, and it's probably over 70% over time will resolve the diabetes.
So the sleeve kind of does the same thing in the sense that it basically gives you a very small stomach area.
It's different in the sense that it's a long, narrow tube, so it's got resistance to it. And people have a very normal feeling of fullness without eating very much. But there are also some not well-defined metabolic changes as well, because you would think, because it's only an operation on the stomach, that it would be purely restrictive. But the fact is, the resolution of diabetes with a sleeve is much closer to a bypass than it is to a band. And the band is obviously a purely restrictive operation.
So what would lead you to choose one or the other, since it sounds like with these two choices, the outcomes are similar?
Well, we really counsel patients to have a sleeve or a bypass. I don't think there's any great advantage to doing a band if you look at the overall results. Now, we have patients who've done great with bands, but if you look at overall statistics, the overall weight loss, the diabetes resolution, and the 30% or so that even the companies that make the bands admit to having to come out, I think, you know, militates against using a band in most patients. I still do some. I think the sleeve and the bypass are the choices. In general, I tend to favor bypasses in bigger patients as the BMI gets higher. And still, in diabetics, many times I'll prefer to do the bypass.
You think that's kind of the proven
I think that's
proven
true.
Technique.
We know results of sleeves only about 8 or 10 years out, as opposed to bypass 20 years out. Now, I think it's true that if you've kept the weight off 8 years, if you gain it back after 8 years, it's not because the operation isn't working. It's because you're doing some things you shouldn't be doing. Mm-hmm. So I think they're both good operations. I think that they each have their different sets of complications, but they're both very effective.
Take us through, let's say I called up as a patient. I wanted to have this kind of surgery. Take us through what happens in terms of the steps.
Well, the first thing is somebody asks you a few screening questions. We want to make sure you're morbidly obese. That means in order to qualify for an operation, just at the base level, your BMI has to be over 40. Or between 35 and 40 with diabetes, sleep apnea, or hypertension. And that means you would theoretically qualify. Then we assign you a time to come to an informational session where I give a talk. We go over the whole program, talk about the problems of morbid obesity, the operations, the risks, the complications, and what needs to be done next. When people have decided that they want to proceed, they have some paperwork, they send it in, and they get scheduled for an appointment with me or one of my partners. And at the first visit, we see them, we completely evaluate them, we go over their history, their physical. We talk about, you know, why they're obese, and we go over what operation they might want to do. And they don't have to decide the first day because the process is really the same for all of them. And then they spend about a half an hour with one of our three dietitians, which is obviously really important to go over things that they need to change to be successful.
So even before they are going to be taken into the OR, so to speak, do they have to demonstrate some will or capability or commitment to weight loss?
Yeah, I think, first of all, they have to have had lost weight before, which most people have. I mean, I had a patient once who lost 300 pounds on a diet and gained back 315 pounds. Oh. That's the nature of the disease. We like most patients, lose about 5% of their weight.
And prior to
the operation. And what that does is it gets, if they're practicing the proper habits, that weight comes off. For the smaller subgroup that has very high BMIs, high 60s, 70s, even 80s, we can do most of those patients laparoscopically as well with the small incisions if they lose about 10% of their weight. What we find is that 10% of weight loss shrinks things down enough. So I've successfully done several people over 500 pounds laparoscopically.
So as part of the concern about having them lose weight before the surgery, the technical aspects of doing the surgery, or is part of it also this idea of the motivation that you're trying to see from the patient?
For most people, it's the motivation and practicing the habits that will make the transition of the operation easier. For that really small subgroup of people who have BMIs in the high 60s, 70s, and 80s, there's also some technical considerations. That's a much smaller percentage of the patients.
Right. Okay, so then they've seen a dietitian, and then what happens?
Well, we give them a list of things that we need to get accomplished together. Patients over 50 with diabetes have to get cardiac stress tests. Many people need sleep tests to make sure they don't have sleep apnea. There's some lab tests that we do. We have them get an appointment with a psychologist for a psychological evaluation.
And does that play an important role in your decision-making in terms of who's an eligible candidate?
I think it does. I think that the psychology evaluation is important also for the patient because the psychologist can touch on a lot of things that they may not have thought about before, reasons and triggers for eating. So I think it's helpful for us. It's also helpful for the patient.
So now, obviously, then once they've gone through all this and some time has passed and they've shown that they've lost some weight, you'll take them into the OR. And obviously, the surgery is always successful initially. What happens after surgery? What kinds of things does the program offer? We're going to run out of time, so just quickly give me a rundown.
Well, what we do, we have, again, three dietitians, two nurse practitioners, and a whole office staff. We need to follow these patients forever. If they have a problem, they need to call us. We help them stay on the right trajectory. And they always have access to me, the practitioners, and most importantly, the dietitians, who are a really big part of this, which is why we have three of them.
Fantastic. Well, first of all, I want to congratulate you for your move and your new digs and the whole new environment. I think that's going to be great. And I want to thank you for coming in and sharing all this wonderful information with us. My guest has been Dr. Howard Simon. He's the chief of bariatric surgery and the director of the Central New York Bariatric Surgery Center, now at Upstate University Hospital on the Community General Campus. We have to take a short break. We'll be right back. So stay right there. We're going to hear about a tale of two cultures from a traveling Fulbright scholar. I'm Linda Cohen, and this is FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYR.